Phone lines lit again. Detectives called numbers from old cards and fresh databases. Doors opened on porches where summer once felt endless. People who had spoken in 1975 spoke again. Some faces had gray at the temples. Some held the same quick smile from school days. Memory moved, but early notes stayed still on paper. The work sat between both. The barber unlocked his shop and set two chairs aside. He remembered sweeping a floor while a white van idled at the curb. He placed the sighting by a song on a radio and by light in the sky. He believed the van carried a long scratch on one side. Reliability note: strong on routine, soft on plate, soft on exact minute. A former bus driver laid a route map on a table and traced turns with a finger. She had seen a plane van more than once along that loop. She remembered a dent low on a back door. She did not remember a plate. Reliability note: strong on road sense, fair on vehicle detail, weak on date. The boy on the bike now stood taller than the detectives. He spoke about a friendly wave from a side window. He remembered a purse strap over one shoulder and hair stuck to a cheek from heat. He did not hear a horn. He did not see a stop. Reliability note: strong on small sensory cues, limited on vehicle features. Detectives used a clean method. Open prompts first. No leading words. Wait for the person to speak without interruption. Anchor to time with neutral checks. What did the air smell like? What sound sat in the background? What placed you on that corner that day? Then pull early notes and read lines back to the witness to see if a fit still held. Kitchen tables became interview rooms. A recorder clicked on. A case card lay between cups of coffee. People leaned back and tried to roll film in the mind. Heat. A bench. A wave. A slow van. The same four pieces surfaced over and over. In many stories, a fifth piece arrived now. A grill nick on the front. A habit of parking tight to hedges. A route that used feeder roads to slip west. One neighbor had saved an old spiral notebook. Pages held short house tasks and small remarks on odd cars. On one page, a square held a line about a white van near the bench in June. No day number sat in the margin. The book entered property as a voluntary item with a signed receipt. Chain began at a porch and moved to the vault by the book. A clerk from a gas station on a feeder road had moved away, then returned. He spoke about a driver with a watch face big as a coin who bought fuel near dusk more than once. He offered register tapes from a box in a garage. The paper strips gave dates and totals. No plate numbers lived there, but the dates paired with delivery logs for several vans checked years earlier. Reliability note: helpful on rhythm, thin on identity. Detectives walked every corner named in those rooms. They took photos with today's light. They matched angles from old shots when possible. They measured sight lines from porch to curb and from bench to driver's side windows. They tested whether a wave from a van fit a child's view from a bike seat height. It did. A woman from two streets over remembered two girls passing her porch late afternoon. She placed it by a game show intro tune on television and by where shadows fell from palms. She thought the girls turned toward a side street and out of sight. Reliability note: precise on home routine, fair on direction, no vehicle view. A retiree who fished at dawn out near the highway offered a memory of a white van passing north and then south within an hour. He set the time by where a shadow hit a stump he used as a mental clock. He had told a deputy in 1975. He told it again now. Reliability note: solid, with the same phrasing across decades. Some voices brought stories built from worry. Detectives listened and then trimmed to hard edges. Where did feet stand? Which way did eyes face? Which sound sat in the ear right then? If conjecture rose, the recorder caught it and the note flagged it. Allegation went in one lane, proven in another. The lanes never mixed. A paint crew foreman opened an old logbook. Names and routes filled the pages. One entry placed a worker with a white van on a loop near the girls' street in June. The foreman believed the loop ended early afternoon, not evening. Names on the log matched men long gone. The log still helped cross off routes for several vans that had drawn attention back then. Reliability note: strong on route shape, weak on exact day, strong on vehicle control. Public records and trade directories supplied dates for licensing, permits, and shop moves. A few names from kinship work overlapped entries for jobs that ran near Hollywood in 1975. Detectives marked each overlap on a map with small dots. More than one dot now sat along a path which led west. The fishing family, who had found the scene, met detectives again. The father repeated his first day narrative with the same order. He had seen two forms on the bank, stepped back, and kept his son away. His wife repeated her line about a white van going north minutes before they pulled off. She still had no plate. Reliability note, high, unchanged, clean of rumor. A few people now recanted parts of old claims. One teen from the era had once said the girls planned to meet older boys. As an adult, he withdrew it. He had heard it secondhand and passed it on. Detectives marked the old line as unproven and moved it to a low-trust annex. Files grow cleaner when people feel safe to pull bad threads. A delivery driver from a sign shop spoke about a co-worker who liked the long road west for breaks. He described a habit of pulling in nose first, facing out for a fast exit. He remembered a door panel with deep ribs on a work van. He named a second man who rode along on some runs. Reliability note, fair on habit, strong on vehicle texture, names sent to records unit. The lab returned macro photos of a ribbed print on cloth. The pitch between ribs matched several van makes from those years. Detectives visited yards and pulled doors from old shells set aside for parts. They laid clear film with the macro print over door ribs. A few fit. None proved one vehicle. The film still gave weight to interviews that spoke of trim rubbing a shoulder. A teacher from the girls' school offered a detail not in early notes. She remembered Barbie asking about a science fair and a plan to work on a small project together during the week. The line did not change the route. It reminded the room who the girls were. Reliability note, humane, not probative. Fresh statements entered the case with dates and witness signatures. Audio files moved into a read-only vault with timestamps. The chain log listed who accessed which file. Each entry used plain verbs. Receive. Record. Store. Review. Release upon lawful request. Detectives ran a cognitive interview with the bus driver to deepen time anchors. They asked her to picture the drive in slow motion, then to step through the loop backward. A few features sharpened. A store window with a broken neon letter. A dog that lay in the same patch of shade most afternoons. The broken letter had been repaired by July. That placed one van sighting in June with more confidence. A woman who had moved away in the 80s returned for a funeral and reached out. She described a white van parked under a fig tree near a side street that fed toward the bench. She drew the tree and a small chip in a curb. Detectives drove over and found the chip still there. The tree had grown wide, roots lifting concrete. Reliability note. Helpful on geography, limited on date, no view inside the van. Teams pulled water records and street permits from the city for June work near those corners. Trucks had blocked one lane on two dates, which changed traffic flow. That shift made it easier for a van to idle without notice near the bench. The note went into a margin and later helped fit the window for a pickup. A cousin of a man linked by kinship work sat for a recorded talk. He described a pair of friends who ran nights and liked the road west for air. He supplied nicknames and a garage address long gone now. He recalled a door nick on a grill and a habit of using pull-offs as meet points. Reliability note, strong on culture and habit, hearsay on specific day. Each time a new name surfaced, detectives tested it against payrolls, rentals, traffic stops, and shop cards. Most fell away. A few stayed on a small board in a side room. The board did not say suspect. It said interview target. Labels stay careful in rooms where proof is the spine. A retired trooper remembered a van stopped near Andytown for a light check around that summer. No citation issued. He believed the driver wore his hair close and spoke little. He had logged the stop in a notebook that the agency no longer held. Reliability note. Fair, with a path to a log index if it survived in microfilm. Archive staff searched old reels. A scan returned one entry for a van stop near that mile marker in June. The image looked faded, but a plate fragment and time block remained legible. The fragment matched a format used in the county then. The time fit the afternoon window for the girl's route, not the next morning. The entry did not name the driver. It did give a plate sequence that paired with a list of registrations from that year. Records pulled a handful of names. One matched a branch of the family tree from lab work. Detectives found a roofer who had worked with that name. He remembered a helper who rode along and handled small lifts. Two men in one cab. He remembered the helper moving away in the early 80s. He believed the helper had a short temper when a job ran long. Reliability note. Fair, pointed, names forwarded to the unit building the second line. More rechecks followed. the canal bank told two sets of hands. Interviews now bent toward pairs of men who shared routes that summer. The logic stayed simple. Find duos. Map their roads. Test those maps against the bench, the side street, the pull-offs, and the time block. A woman who sold bait near the highway remembered a customer who bought ice and asked if the road south had patrol units around sunrise. She did not know his name. She remembered a watch with a wide face and a deep tan line where the band sat. She remembered a small square sticker on a rear door of a white van. Reliability note: thin on ID, strong on odd detail. The unit track sticker type sold in that era for trades. A sign shop owner from long ago had a few rolls left in a drawer. The backing paper carried a maker code. Detectives compared that code to invoices tied to garages where two names from the board bought supplies. A match did not prove a van. It did place both men inside a network where that code moved. Family members for both men received quiet visits with respect at the front of every talk. Some invited detectives in and shared photos that showed haircuts, builds, and vehicles. Some declined. Consent led every step on private ground. People deserve peace, even inside a line of inquiry. One photo showed a man with a van door open near a hedge line. The door panel ribs stood clear. A faint nick on the grill showed in sun. The print came from a box of mixed family shots with no dates. A lab scanned the image and cleaned edges. The photo went into evidence with a chain line and a receipt back to the owner. Reliability note: strong image, weak date, strong on feature match to macro pitch. Detectives ran a quiet drive from the bench to each pull-off named in recent talks. They timed each leg. They repeated the drive with a van borrowed from a fleet, then with a pickup of the same span as marks found near a cut north of the recovery point. The van fit the angles at the bank better than the pickup. The pickup fit one wider cut. Neither test named a driver. Both framed how a date in June could have unfolded minute by minute. A widow brought out a box of tools from her garage. Among them sat a door trim strip with a rib pitch close to the cloth print. Her husband had worked in a body shop. He had saved parts from old vans. The strip entered evidence with photos and a signed receipt. The lab measured pitch and depth and wrote a comparison note. The fit fell inside tolerance. It stopped short of a direct match to one vehicle. Reliability note: useful on class features. By winter, re-interviews had given the file a fresh layer that sat over 1975 like tracing paper. Lines did not cover every gap. Lines did point to a second name inside the kinship tree, which touched the first. Staff moved slow and checked pride at the door. A wrong leap now would harm more than a headline. A quiet voice on a late call named a man who rode in a van with the first named offender. The caller spoke from a long distance and asked for no return call to his home. He gave a year of death for the second man and a county where papers might still hold records. He named a habit of driving back roads and using feeder lanes to slip west. Reliability note: untested tip, gated for records first. Records fed into the tree. A death in 2005. A set of addresses that placed the second man near the first in earlier years. A trade card once used by both. The overlap read like two threads woven in the same cloth. The lab pulled garment extracts again and aimed at zones still on hold from the first pass. Wet vacuum filters gave thin yield in one spot that a swab alone had missed. The instrument drew peaks that sat low but clear. The profile did not match the first man or either girl. It read as a male. It read across markers with strength enough to try again. The room went quiet and then moved. Two voices now rose from cloth, and interviews had begun to point at a pair. The next chapter pressed toward a second name, and the proof needed to speak it aloud. The second profile began as a thin rise on a screen where most lines lay flat. The lab repeated the run. The line rose again in the same place. It did not match the girls. It did not match the first named man. It read male. It held across markers that matter. The team slowed the room and went back to the start. Fresh gloves. Fresh tubes. New prep from the same garment zones that had been held back during the first pass. A swab alone had missed it earlier. A gentle wet vacuum over deep weave had found it. The instrument confirmed the trace in two runs by two analysts. Controls read clean. The blanks stayed quiet. The lab lead signed the page that said the signal was real. The file had a procedure for this moment. Stabilize the profile with repeats. Compare against staff elimination samples. Compare against the victims. move to past reference swabs held by consent. When those steps showed no match, check the family tree that had already grown during work on the first name. The genealogists did not narrate. They drew boxes and lines and dates until a clear branch formed where the second profile could live. The tree narrowed with each record pulled from vital files and address logs. A short list of men occupied the branch. The list did not start with a stranger. Interviews in the prior chapter had already placed a second man in the same circles as the first. Jobs overlapped. Routes overlapped. One name kept showing on old shop cards and on a short roster from a trade yard near the girl's route. The name was Lawrence Stein. Lawful routes to a direct comparison were set on paper before a single call left the room. The lab and the prosecutor agreed to look for retained reference material first. If a lawful retained sample could not be found, the plan called for family reference testing by consent at a level that answered the question. No one moved on any invasive step without need and authority. Records showed that Lawrence Stein had died in 2005. A search found a retained reference suitable for comparison. The item reached the lab under escort with seals checked at each door. Staff opened the kit under video and read identifiers out loud. A second analyst watched and wrote the time. The lab moved the crime scene extract and the retained reference onto separate benches in separate rooms. The only place they met was inside the instrument. The instrument drew a profile from the retained reference. Analysts compared it to the second male profile from the cloth. Marker by marker, the lines matched. A second analyst repeated the comparison and signed her own sheet. A third reviewed both and signed a review line with date and time. The lab lead wrote a summary that named the match, the strength, the number of confirming runs, and the quality of controls. The packet left the lab in a binder with a seal across the flap. Detectives met with the prosecutor in a small room that had one window and a whiteboard. The lab lead set the report on the table and walked through each step in order. The prosecutor asked for the chain at every move. Staff read the chain into the record. Nothing in the paths crossed without a line. The name stood on the table with the paper to hold it. The second profile belonged to Lawrence Stein. The file moved at two speeds after that. One speed was legal and slow. The other speed was field work. Detectives drew up a new board with simple aims. Fix the named man in South Florida during the window around the abduction. Chart his work in vehicles. Identify any pairings with the first named man. Seek supporting details that did not depend on memory alone. Trade records place Stein with work crews that used vans and cut through the same feeder roads that run west. A shop owner remembered him as steady but private. A roofer recalled short tempers when a job ran late and a habit of parking with the nose out for a quick leave. Old address cards showed a path that overlapped routes used by the first named man. A traffic log on microfilm yielded a plate format that matched a registration once held by a crew Stein worked with. None of these pieces named who drove or who rode on a given day. Together they drew a map that made the second name fit the case without strain. Detectives returned to interviews that spoke of two sets of hands at the canal bank. The set-down shapes on the slope had already argued for a pair. The heel that faced the water and the heel that faced the road matched a crouch and a lift in two directions. The ribbed print across a shoulder had looked like door trim from a van. The lab had traced the pitch in millimeters and found it consistent with trim from several makes used by work crews then. A photo from a family box showed Stein near an open van door. The panel ribs in the print and the ribs in the photo shared the same pitch. The image lacked a date. It still added shape. The lab took one more pass through cloth to test zones that might hold contact from a second pair of hands. Most tested blank. One small area near a pocket gave a low but clear echo of the second profile. The lab did not force a call. It wrote the result in careful lines. The echo supported the match. The echo did not add a new name or a sequence. That restraint mattered. Families heard the news in person. The detective in charge spoke first. He named the second man and said the year of death. He did not hide from the hard part. No charges. No trial. No sentence. Proof on paper and in lab files. Two names. Both men gone. He handed the talk to the lab lead for the method and then took it back when questions moved to routes and roles. The room held grief and relief at once. Family members asked where Stein had lived, whether he and the first man knew each other, and how sure the lab felt. The answers were measured and clear. The lab had stacked support. The links were independent. The standard was met. the unit checked itself for overreach. Staff compared the findings against cases people always mention when canals meet fear. The details did not compel a global link. Age, method, and location moved in and out of alignment across files. The report put that in plain text, so the record would not grow claims it could not hold. This case now named two men by strong lab work and supporting field steps. That was the core. Detectives wrote a timeline that started in the kitchen where report cards lay on a table and ended at the bank where the morning found the girls. They did not fill gaps with guesswork. They wrote what the map allowed and what busier roads looked like at those hours. They described pull-offs that hide a short stop under road noise. They showed how two people could lift and leave in minutes. They wrote a line that said who drove still sat unknown. They wrote a line that said motive was not stated by the evidence and would not be set by a story. The property room closed the loop with fresh seals and signatures across every bag. Extracts sat in freezers with temperature logs printed and filed. The binder that carried the lab packet now held two names and two separate chains for the reference sources. The clerk read each seam with a finger and checked each signature against images taken before the work began. The box went back to the shelf between markers for the range where it had lived for years. Leadership asked for a plan to speak to the public. The unit proposed a date and a format. The speaker would present the timeline first, then the evidence steps, then the names with dates of death, then the meaning of exceptionally cleared. Clear language would separate what the lab proved from what interviews suggest. Space would be given for questions from family before questions from the press. The plan set a calm frame, so the day did not tip into rumor or heat. Detectives made one more loop through shops and houses tied to the second man. They showed photos of vans from that era without badges or lights. They asked about door trim with a deep rib. They asked about a grill nick that matched the shape seen in the family photo. One garage owner remembered a repair to a nick in the same place. He did not keep invoices that old. He pointed to a wall where old service stickers once hung. The paint showed a clean rectangle where a paper had been peeled away years ago. The memory went into a note with a caution line. The absence of paper kept the weight low. One more check of records found a short-lived partnership between the men in a small hustle that moved tools and materials from one lot to another. The work fit the routes that pointed west. The work fit a need for a van with open cargo. It did not fix a date. It did show both men shared roads in daylight. The lab settled the question of whether the two profiles came from independent sources or from lab handling by mistake. Staff pulled the blanks from each run and showed they stayed quiet. They mapped which bench saw which item on which day and under which analyst. None overlapped in a way that could build a false second voice. The lab lead signed an internal memo that set this out in plain words and filed it with the packet. The prosecutor read the full packet and wrote a cover line that carried weight in court language. The case met the standard for naming both men as the offenders in the murders of Barbara Schreiber and Darlene Zetterauer. The line did not create charges. It framed truth. It opened a path for the agency to speak. Families chose whether to stand in the room on the day the names were said. Some sat in front. Some watched from a quiet space nearby. A victim advocate stayed close to each. Detectives stood in the back with their notebooks closed. No one wrote in that hour. That was not the point. The statement for that day had an order that could not shift. First the date in 1975, then the bank on the edge of open water, then the chain that saved the cloth, then the science that grew on top of that care, then the first name with the year of death, then the second name with the year of death, then the line that said there would never be a trial, and that late justice still carried meaning because it came from proof, not wish. When the room emptied, the unit met once more and set tasks that remained. A memorial visit to the canal on a quiet morning. A packet of documents for the families that held the method in plain language. A list of public records to release and a list to protect under law. A short letter to the property clerk that thanked the room for keeping the box right for so long. The record now held two names. It held the method used to find them. It held the limits that stayed in place. It held respect for what could not be answered. The case did not turn into something it was not. It did not try to solve more than it proved. It held to the line that had carried it for 50 years. The lab spoke. The paper held. The families heard. The canal stayed quiet. The next chapter moved the work to the road itself. It rebuilt the route from the girls' street to the bank with daylight, traffic, and time in mind, and it showed where a driver could have slowed without notice while the city looked the other way. Detectives began with a map on a table. Pushpins marked the house, the corner bench, two side streets, feeder roads that run west, and the canal bank north of Andytown. A clock sat beside the map. The goal was simple. Turn a summer afternoon into minutes anyone could follow. A team walked the first leg from the house to the bench at the same hour school would have let out. They filmed curb to curb and marked where a driver could roll slow without blocking. They measured how long two teams needed to clear each crosswalk. They timed a normal pace and a quick one. The times differed by a few minutes. Both fit the window given by porch witnesses. A second team drove the roads that peel west toward open water. In 1975, the path out of Hollywood met long stretches where a vehicle could move without stop after stop. The test car held the speed of a work van under summer flow. No rush, no hesitation. They timed the run to US 27 and then to the pull-offs near the bank. The clock read a span under an hour with lights and slow trucks folded in. The return run at dawn gave a shorter number. The route worked both ways. On the ground near the bench, officers marked places where a van could idle without drawing a horn or a shout. A delivery truck used one of those spots twice during the test day. Its driver sat with the nose out and the rear doors close to a hedge. In that posture, the passenger window could open to the sidewalk without the whole vehicle feeling present. The shape matched more than one witness line from the first canvas. The route from the corner to the canal bank carried choke points. The team drove each choke at the same hour and watched traffic waves. One curve slowed the field to a crawl every third cycle. The rest ran open. A driver who knew these waves could choose a turn that kept the van moving and out of view of neighbors who would remember a stop. The map gained arrows where experience beat chance. Detectives repeated the drive at dusk with a loaner van from a fleet. They mounted a camera at driver eye height and another at passenger eye height. The footage showed how the bench and side street come into view, how a wave from a window reads to a teen on a bike, and how a slow roll feels like an invitation when the walk has been quiet and hot. The camera also showed how quickly the sidewalk disappears once the van turns off the block and heads for the feeder road. You lose view within seconds. The corner falls behind in a mirror full of glare. A unit staged a measured stop at two pull-offs north of the recovery point. The driver nosed in and set the van so the passenger side faced reeds. The time from brake to back on the road was recorded again and again. The shortest cycle, with two people moving together, took under 3 minutes. The longest cycle, with fumbling and a look up and down the shoulder, took 5. Truck's mask sound. Reeds blocked sight from the south for the first critical seconds. Road roar helped a plan that wanted speed more than stealth. Maps from the 70s confirmed where gas stations, shops, and light industrial lots sat along the feeder roads. Detectives built a list of places that would feel normal for a work van to pass in the late afternoon. They drove that list in order. At each turn, they noted where a driver could change direction without waiting on a long light. Shortcuts that lived in muscle memory back then still worked now. The map added those lines in a different color. The team tested how fast a driver could move from the bench to a point west without drawing attention. They staged a van with a nick on the grill and door ribs like the macro print suggested. They placed a volunteer at the corner with the same height as the boy on the bike. The driver rolled up and gave a small wave. The volunteer saw the wave and the grill. He did not catch the plate. He caught the scratch. The plate sat low and in shadow. The detail matched old notes. At each leg, the unit wrote the same three numbers. Time to reach the turn. Time to clear the turn. Time to leave the grid of houses. The average across trials felt plain. A driver who practiced these streets could be past the last houses in minutes. The bench to the open west did not require luck. It required a routine. Detectives pressed on the return path, the morning run from the city back to the canal bank. Sunrise traffic on US 27 left long gaps between clusters. A van could pass a family looking for a fishing spot and not be remembered, unless the van carried a mark or habit that stuck. The wife in the fishing truck had held one detail for 50 years. A white van going north minutes before they pulled off. The test drive fit that detail into a clock with room to spare. The route line wrapped around the question of where the van parked during the afternoon window. Officers checked lots named in old interviews. Some had become apartments. Some had become fenced yards. A few still held the same shape of open gravel near hedges. You could wait there without anyone asking a question. A camera set at curb height recorded angles where a girl on foot would be blind to the driver until he was close enough to speak at normal volume. The pull-off north of the recovery point received a longer study. The span between ruts matched full-size vans from the era. The approach angle from the highway let a driver nose in and face out in one smooth motion. From that angle, a person could lift weight from a side door and step around reeds to the slope. A second person could watch the road at shoulder height and speak if a truck drifted over the line. The time in this move stayed under 2 minutes in dry conditions. The day of the recovery had been dry. Detectives ran a no-van test as a control. They drove a sedan with two doors along the same path. Set down and exit took longer. Access to the slope from a lower seat gave less room to lift. The prints the team left on soft ground sat at different angles. The control helped the room lean away from a sedan as the primary vehicle. The unit mapped places where a driver might pause before heading west. They matched those to shifts from old job logs and to gas sales blocks recovered from microfilm. The matches did not name a driver by themselves. They did place trade work on the right roads on the right days. A person who chose those roads often would have known how far to press the gas between lights and how little to show at a corner. A detective and a prosecutor drove the full line at the hour seen in the family photo that showed a van door open near a hedge. The door ribs in the photo matched the macro print pitch on cloth within the tolerance the lab had written. The photo lacked a date, so the drive stayed a demonstration, not proof. It still mattered to stand at the bench and follow the turn minutes later, because the mind holds distance better after the feet and eyes feel it. Along the route, the team noted two spots where water trucks and repair crews had altered traffic during June. On those days, the main lanes narrowed for an hour. A van that wanted to slip west could use the slowdown to blend with work vehicles without drawing interest. Records placed both named men in trades that ran near those lanes. The memo that logged this kept tone narrow. Placement is not proof. It is a path to check twice. The window for the abduction sat between school hours and dinner. The drive to the canal sat between late afternoon and dusk if the next morning discovery is the measure. The route allowed both. A driver could hold two girls in a van and still arrive at the bank before full dark. The test runs used legal speeds and no special skills. Nothing exotic lived in this path. It was a string of ordinary turns. Detectives walked the last yards again. The angle of the slope. The height of the reeds. The view from the shoulder. They rehearsed the lift with weighted bags and noted how a second person makes the motion shorter. A heel mark that faces water and another that faces road appear when two people pivot in opposite directions to set weight down level. The marks on the bank fit that pair of motions. The team wrote the move in one paragraph without extra words. Night tests showed how road lights and sky glow carry enough illumination for a quick setdown without a flashlight. A flashlight would draw the eye of any driver who glanced off the road. No light would also leave fewer reflections on water. The family who found the scene had not reported glare from a beam or a dropped lamp. The test stayed consistent with their morning account. The office recorded these trials with timestamps, video, and logs of each pause and restart. The package read like a procedure, not a narrative. It refused to say which man drove and which road. It refused to state who chose the pull-off. It did one thing only. It fixed the route as a series of minutes a team of two could repeat with the vehicle witnesses described. The gaps left by time remained. The string through those gaps did not. When the route work ended, detectives walked back to the kitchen where the girls had looked at their report cards. They stood in the doorway and watched the light through a screen and the way a clock above the stove marked minutes. The file would never answer why the van stopped where it stopped. It had answered how a driver moved from one door to a canal bank. It had answered how long each turn takes when you know the streets and when you trust speed over stealth. The chapter closed with a printed map that carried three simple lines. House to bench. Bench to feeder road. Feeder road to US 27 and the bank. Each line held numbers for time and distance. Each number came from a wheel on the road and a hand on a clock. The box on the shelf had given voices. The road had given shape. The next step returned to the girls and to what investigators learned about the hours before the route was chosen. The medical examiner's suite was bright and steady. Air moved through filters. Lights ran cool. The room came alive with measured voices and clean steps. The pathologist began with the outside of each body. He noted clothing still in place. He spoke in short lines. Height, build, hair, distinct marks. He called out any trace on skin or fabric and had it photographed before a hand touched it. Clothing came off in stages on clean paper. Each piece was photographed on both sides with a scale. Labels faced the camera. Seals went back on the bags as soon as an item returned to paper. Nothing left the table without a number. The first clear fact lived in wounds. Each girl had been shot. Entries and exits were mapped on a body chart. Edges were described. Direction was estimated. No soot at the edges. No tattooing of skin from powder. The shots read as distant more than close. The note used the plain words the field understands. Bullets and fragments were recovered and placed into separate containers. Each container took a label with case number and item number. The pathologist called the time for the recorder and handed each container to a tech who signed a change sheet on the spot. A detective watched and repeated the number to catch any slip. Hands and nails were checked for trace. Swabs were taken and labeled. The faces were examined under raking light to show any abrasion that might not appear at first glance. Small scrapes were noted. None told a story alone. All went into the record. A wash did not begin until every surface had been photographed and every loose trace had been lifted. Hair was combed over clean paper. Any debris that fell into the paper cradle went into a fold with a number. The fold took a seal. The seal took initials and the time. Internal findings went into the dictation in the same steady tone. Injury paths matched what the body charts showed. No evidence of fire lived on skin or in airways. Lungs told their own quiet truth when opened. Time of death was framed within a window that matched the recovery hour and the heat the morning gave. The pathologist did not stretch beyond what tissue can say. Forensic staff completed standard screens of clothing for semen and saliva. The record from that year said the initial screens did not confirm sexual assault. That line had lived in summaries for decades. Modern testing would honor it by checking again with better tools when the chain allowed. Gunshot residue kits were prepared and applied as the era required. Everyone in the room knew the limits. Water and time blunt residue fast. The kits went into storage under seal with the caution already written into their value. They would not drive conclusions on their own. Ballistics moved as a second path. Recovered bullets and fragments went to a bench for measurement. Lands and grooves were recorded. Caliber was estimated. The lab logged the items for future comparison against any weapon that might be found. No one had a gun in hand. The notebook stayed ready. The report consolidated each fact in plain language. Cause of death was listed as gunshot wounds. Manner of death was listed as homicide. The document sat with signatures and timestamps. Copies were secured under the same controls that held the clothing and the bullets. The chain never stopped moving on paper. The clerk took custody of sealed containers. A vault logged the receipt with two signatures. The property room placed each container where air moved and where labels could be read without handling. The chain page showed every hand that touched a seal until it left for ballistics or for later work. A second look at skin and clothing under low light found faint transfers. A band at a shoulder showed a ribbed texture. That texture would matter when macro photos and door trim entered the story years later. The note that captured it was small. It spoke louder with time. The final steps at the examiner's suite returned focus to respect. Bodies were cleaned. Personal items were recorded and secured. The pathologist signed the report. The detective read the summary twice. The science spoke without flourishes. Families received the findings with care. Detectives delivered the words face to face. They explained what the wounds showed. They explained what the lab could not yet say. They did not guess at sequence. They set expectations for how ballistics and later tools might add clarity. They promised to call even when the answer was no change. The report joined maps, photos, and logs in a file that grew thicker with order, not noise. It fixed the truth that the canal bank was not the killing ground. It fixed distance for shots. It fixed the path for bullets into containers with seals that would be read many years later. The chapter closed on a quiet bench in the examiner's hallway. A detective held the folder on his lap and watched the door to the vault. Paper and metal now held what the girls could no longer say. The work would move to the lab and the road, but it would always return to this document when doubt looked for a foothold. Research log. Cause of death recorded as gunshot wounds and recovery site near the canal north of Andytown. Later identified offenders named by Broward Sheriff in 2025, with no trial due to both being deceased. Morning moved slow inside the sheriff's building. A crew rolled a podium into place and checked one microphone after another. A deputy taped cords to the floor so no one would trip. Chairs faced a wall where a simple timeline would appear without drama. No slogans, only dates, places, and steps. Detectives met in a side room with a prosecutor and the lab lead. A binder lay open on the table. It held the chain of custody, the lab memos, and the two match reports with signatures in clean ink. The detective in charge read the order one more time. Timeline first. Evidence steps second. Names third. Status last. The room agreed. No one would stray. A victim advocate sat with the families in a quiet space off the main hall. She set cups of water on a low table and left tissues within reach. The lab lead joined them for a short walk through the science in plain words. She described swabs on cuffs and pockets. She described extraction and repeats. She said the blanks stayed quiet. She said both profiles had been confirmed by independent analysts. She stopped there. The families would hear the names in the larger room only once. Reporters gathered as the hour approached. Camera lights warmed the front row. Pages rustled. The sheriff stepped to the podium and began with the date from long ago and the road by water. He said the girls' names first. He said families had waited for proof that spoke. He handed the line to the detective. The detective showed a simple map. House to bench. Bench to feeder road. Feeder road to the canal bank. He spoke about early scene work. Paper sacks instead of plastic. Labels and ink across seals. A room where air moved and where boxes did not stack heavy on cloth. He spoke about a lab that did not exist in 1975. He said that lab could now read what the careful work had saved. The lab lead stepped forward. She described controls that proved the room stayed clean. She described repeats by more than one analyst. She said the first profile from cloth matched Robert Clark Keebler. She said the second profile matched Lawrence Stein. She named their years of death in one steady line. She did not guess at motive or sequence. She placed both names on the board and returned to her seat. A prosecutor took the microphone and explained the phrase everyone would repeat that week. Exceptionally cleared. He said the standard was proof strong enough for court if the men still lived. He said the office had checked the math and the method twice. He said the law would not bring a trial. He said truth still mattered on paper. Questions rose at once. Was this tied to other cases by water? The detective answered with care. He said the file held differences that set it apart from some events people name in the same breath. He said the lab had checked ballistics and fibers where it could. He said the record did not support a sweeping link. He kept the lane narrow. Proven stayed on one side. Talk stayed on the other. A reporter asked who drove and who rode. The detective said the scene argued for two sets of hands at the bank. He said the file did not fix who took the wheel. He said that gap remained. He asked the public to send any record that placed either man with a van near the girls' route in June. Another reporter asked what made the lab so sure after so many years. The lab lead pointed to the stack of support. Two profiles from deep weave and cuff zones. Repeats by independent hands. Clean blanks. A retained reference for each man. A review by an outside statistician. She said the standard had been met. She did not raise her voice. She did not dress the moment in large words. The sheriff closed the conference with one short line. The office had named the men who killed Barbara Schreiber and Darlene Zetterauer. He thanked the families for their patience and for their trust. He asked the public to respect their space. He stepped away before the cameras could call him back. Phones lit the squad room by early afternoon. Tips came in with small details. Old photos. Names of garages. Mentions of door trim with deep ribs. The call takers wrote time, place, and why the caller believed a memory tied to 1975. They marked rumor when they heard it. They passed clean lines to detectives and filed the rest without heat. In the lab, extracts went back to freezers with temperature logs printed and clipped to the binder. The room archived the digital files to a vault that sat on a system with no outside path. The lead wrote a short note for the packet that would go to families. It laid out the method in simple lines and listed which items might hold value for any future tool. Detectives drove to the canal at dusk with the families and an advocate. No cameras followed. The sky turned the water the color of tin. Reeds moved in a light wind. A deputy stood back by the road to keep space clear. The detective described how the first team had mapped the slope. He pointed to places where a van could nose in and face out. He spoke in a low voice and kept it short. The families listened and said the girls' names out loud. Silence sat with them. No one hurried it. Back at the office, the unit wrote a memo that captured the day. It listed what had been said and what had not. It fixed the limits so no later summary would stretch them. It recorded the status of every item in property and in the lab. It set a date to review any new tips. It named who held the duty phone for after hours. The prosecutor met with the team in the evening. He said a few calls had already asked for the lab packet. He said the office would release what the law allowed once families had time to review. He said the words the public would read needed to match what the lab had written. He asked the detective to stay available for a radio interview that wanted the process, not the headline. The detective agreed on the condition that the girls' names came first. By night, the press trucks were gone. The podium sat in a corner under a cloth. The corridors held a tired quiet. In the property room, a clerk made one last round. She checked the cooler door. She checked the row where the box sat between two markers. She touched the seam on a paper bag and read the oldest signature with one finger. Ink had held through moves, storms, and time. That line made the day possible. Calls kept coming through the week. A man sent a roll of photos from a family garage. A woman brought a sticker from an old toolbox that matched the maker code detectives had traced. A retired mechanic offered a memory of a grill repair on a white van with a nick in the right place. None of these items named a driver. All found a line in the file. The map grew a little darker where roads crossed. Families met the detective again at week's end. They asked how to carry this new knowledge into the years ahead. He said there is no rule for that. He said people choose their own rituals. He offered a packet with the method written in clear words. He offered to keep calling even when a week passed with no new step. He said their trust had guided the work. They thanked him for staying in the lane and not turning the case into a story that outran proof. A teacher from the girls' school sent a note that said a group would place two small plaques near the bench. The office replied with respect and without speeches. The plaques went up on a quiet morning with no microphones. Names were spoken in a circle of friends who had grown older and still kept small keepsakes in drawers. Inside the unit, the board that once held the word profile now held a short list titled tasks that remain. One line asked for a final pass through garages that once sold door trim with the right pitch. Another asked for a sweep of microfilm for the summer light checks on US 27. A third asked for interviews with any co-worker who could place both men in a van on a day close to the crime. The work did not stop. It changed shape. The lab prepared a training talk for recruits. The lead placed a paper bag on a table and spoke for 10 minutes about the choice between paper and plastic and heat. She held up a photo of a seam with a signature from 1975. She said this is what a future needs from a present. She said the room now knew why. The detective in charge stood by the canal one more time before the week ended. Trucks rolled past and swallowed small sounds. He thought about the father who had stayed back from the bank and kept his son by the truck. He thought about the clerk who had drawn boxes around numbers in a ledger so tired eyes would find them fast. He thought about a lab bench where a blank read quiet. He turned and drove back toward town. The chapter closed with the facts now public. Two names, both dead before the day they were spoken. A file that held proof in ink and in peaks on a screen. A city that had waited a half century and still kept care for two girls who had walked a short route under a hot sky. The work would go on in smaller circles now. The record would not fade.